Barbarian Tribes of Ancient Rome, The Germanic Gods, Part 4, Miscellaneous. It is in the finished form that the precise detail of the concept of the world as the Yggdrasil tree belongs to the Viking Age. According to this concept, the upper part of the tree extended into the dwelling place of the gods, with the earth in the center and the underworld beneath it, where the envious teeth of Nithogr were constantly gnawing away at the roots of the tree of life, and where solid earth is surrounded by a long, writhing form of the earth serpent. The serpent symbol is old in Germanic art. Many of the brooches, for example, end in serpent heads, as do also the boats. It is even possible that there is sufficient background for the twining serpent to account for the German animal ornamentation of later times without having the Goths imported from the Scythians. The thing which is new in the Germanic religion, in its later form at least, is its inherent pessimism. There is not only a twilight of the gods, there is a dark, deep, impenetrable night. There are two obvious explanations. It might be said that these would symbolize the constant fear in the minds of the men, that the strength of the sun would not be renewed, that the everlasting winter would sometimes rule, that darkness would conquer the light, and that the everlasting gods, as well as the everlasting hills, would one day cease to be. One can imagine that it is possible to believe in the northern climates, where the division of the year into a period of light and a period of dark were not so far from being realized, and must certainly have been known to those who had been the more northerly areas. On the other hand, one could introduce an ethical explanation. One could say that the poets of the Nibelung had the ring symbol of honor, of integrity, and of worth and value come into the possession of the gods in the first instance as a result of treachery and deceit, of treachery against the mysterious forces of the underground as represented by the dwarfs, and that the curse upon the horde by the chief of the dwarfs must be expiated not only by the gods but on all those mortals who might come into possession of the horde. That is certainly true of all the mortal owners from Siegfried to the Burgundian kings. But the gods, too, were guilty. They built the mighty fortress of Valhalla as a protection against the day of expiation and the inevitable battle, and even cheated the giant who built the stronghold for them. And thus the whole foundation of the heavenly structure was built upon deceit. If justice were to prevail, the gods themselves must perish. Perhaps the true explanation lies in the combination of the two alternatives, a combination which was not the result of conscious elaboration or metaphysical speculation. We must remember that the people who put the final touches on the Germanic religious system were trained from youth to believe in the expectation of war, to the idea of death and conflict, to the belief that death in battle was rather to be welcomed than feared. For was not the afterlife a warrior's paradise? Such conditions are favorable to development of fatalism. Fatalism can very easily end up in the acceptance of negation, in the belief of the final end of all things. People in the northern clime are more likely to be vaguely conscious of these ideas than people in the softer climate of the south. The north is a land of conflict and struggle. It's easy to believe in fate. It's easy to believe in Nachtdämmerung. It is not very steep from that to a Mesodämmerung and Gotterdämmerung. The principle of conflict was inherent to the religion of the Germanic people. This was never-ceasing struggle between the Vani and the Asi, between the cult of the Earth Mother and that of the Sky God. Even with the cult of the Earth Mother, there were inherents in the principle of death. This was, to be sure, followed by a resurrection, but the doubt was always there. Otherwise, the ceremonies, the sacrifices, ritualistic practices, and orgiastic rites, which were necessary to ensure the revival of nature in the springtime, could all have been omitted. It is in the second act of the long drama in the Viking Age one can see the complete working out of the assimilation of the two cults, and in the epilogue of the falling apart and the period of disintegration. During the period of struggle, the period of migrations, the more warlike elements of the combined cults came to the front. The time required war gods, war heroes. Later, submerged elements of the Earth Mother cult came in the fore again and had a tendency to dominate. There were among the Germanic peoples, as among the Romans, two forms of worship, domestic or household worship, and that of the community or public worship. The domestic worship was not necessarily restricted to the interior of the house, but might be performed in the open in connection with certain sacred trees or a grove or a stream. The head of the family acted as the family priest, not only in the performance of some of the religious rituals, but also in the casting of lots or the interpretation of the signa to determine the course of action of the family. To what extent statues or models in wood or other material of the household gods were made before the days of direct contact with the Roman Empire is still undecided. Tacitus tells us that the Germanic peoples made no use simulacra, material representations of the gods. But then in another passage, he describes the Nerthus procession with a statue of the goddess. This, of course, was a public ceremony, and Tacitus may have been referring only to private worship when he made his statement about the absence of simulacra. However, some rather crudely made figures, presumably of the deities, have been found, but it has proved quite impossible to identify them with any particular god or goddess. It is an open question whether the god or priest of Iceland was a survival of an ancient custom with the shrine and the paraphernalia of worship, or whether it was developed in later times after contact with Roman usage, which possibly some indirect influence of Christianity. It is also known from various sources that many of the Germanic tribes, the Saxons for instance, regarded certain trees, usually the oak, as sacred and as being the home of the god. In order to convince the heathen Saxons of the impotency of their gods, the Christian missionaries, we are told, cut down sacred oaks. These oak trees, sometimes also wooden pillars, were earlier survivals of the tree of life or the phallic symbols respectively, and were consequently closely associated with the worship of the mother god. That is why we hear so often in ancient records of prisoners of war being hanged on trees of the grove. They were a sacrifice to Wudan, who, it will be recalled, of his own free will, hung on the tree in order to penetrate the mysteries of the universe. In connection with the religious practice of the Simenoni, we are told that they worshipped in a sacred grove, that they entered this grove fettered, and appeared to have been sacred and invisible in presence. But if by any chance they stumbled and fell, they were required to make their exit from the grove crawling on their hands and knees. No doubt the practice varied from tribe to tribe, but generally speaking, Germanic religious belief did not favor corporeal representation of tribal deities, at least during the period of the high form of the Wudan cult. This is also an indication that the Nerthus cult belonged to a different religious concept. It is impossible to say definitely whether or not the figures on the rock carvings of the Bronze Age are intended to be representations of the gods. They appear to portray certain acts of worship or attitudes towards the deities. If they had been intended to indicate the gods themselves, they would probably have drawn them with more characteristic mark in which they could be identified. It is difficult to decide just what the precise attitude of Germanic peoples towards their gods actually is. Usually sacrifices and other religious rites are either for the sake of appeasing an angry god or for the sake of obtaining special favor, either personal or communal. No doubt both of these principles played a certain role in the attitude of Germanic people. Humility in certain cases undoubtedly was there, as witnessed the approach of the Simoni on the dwelling place of a god in the sacred grove. Generally speaking, however, it seems to be correct to say that the Germanic spirit of independence and of defiance was so strong to suppliant an attitude towards the deities is scarcely to be expected. There were certain festivals in the public worship that were particularly important in the lives of Germanic peoples. These festivals were in the autumn, at New Year, in the spring, and at midsummer. The festivals are quite clearly connected with the rites of the fertility worship and with the cult of the sun. The winter festival, Jule or Yule, or the New Year's festival, was intended to induce the sun to regain its former strength and return to fortify Mother Earth. The spring festival, our Easter season, corresponded with the signs of the renewal of nature. It was a justification of preceding sacrifices. It was proof of the revival of the god, a proof of the reality of hope. The word Easter is connected with the word for east, and is a very ancient word in the Indo-European language. The sun rises in the east, and out of the mysterious depths of the unknown beyond, The horizon of the sun has been resurrected to greater, increasing power daily as a blessing to the plants, animals, and men. The autumn festival, on the other hand, would be a period of mourning, as was the records of the mourning for Tanaros. The god has apparently lost his virility and he is dying, and there is sorrow for his death and sacrifices and offerings of the first fruits for the first being to bring about a return or a resurrection. Probably the greatest festival of all was held in Midsummer Day to celebrate the sun's regaining power and virility. This was the occasion for the coming together of large cult communities, embracing many related tribes. When such festivals were held in those of the Nethrus cult or the religious celebrations in the sacred grove of the Simoni, on these occasions a general peace would be declared, something like a truce of God in the Middle Ages or the Peace of Frey, which we hear about in Viking times. The memory of this festival is still preserved in the lighting of the Jannanes fires on the night of Midsummer Day. The Viking concept of Woden will give some idea of the thoughts of the Germanic people in respect to their gods in periods of strife and turmoil. The concept of Wudan was a mighty warrior, an imposing figure who had acquired a knowledge of intimate secrets of nature and human fate, and who ruled over the universe much as a Germanic chieftain or Viking leader ruled over his people. This concept was the creation of the Germanic people. Many of the beliefs of this ancient Germanic religion in both the Wudan worship aspect and the aspect of the religion of Magna Mater were only superficially modified by the teachings of the Christian Church. Old beliefs and customs are definitely hard to eradicate. So that takes us through the Germanic religion as it is. You can see it is still pretty much a mystery because we don't have any written, very little writing from the early days. Now the source for this, The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owens, Civilization of the Celts by Launay, Civilization of the Steppes by Conrad. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.